committees have to fit their spending into. And it sets the stage for what the Democrats want to do strictly partisan. And there wasn't a single Republican that voted for the budget, and I don't believe there's going to be a single Republican that will vote for the $3.5 trillion it's going to spend in addition, which is really $4.2 trillion in addition to what we do on infrastructure. For 4 years, President Trump tried to get Congress to take up a $2 trillion infrastructure bill. I had a lot of people during those 4 years as I toured Iowa in my 99 county tour that I do every year, saying, when are you ever going to get infrastructure done? It probably didn't get done because the Democrats didn't want him to have it, even though there's a lot of Republicans would have been glad to work for the president because I'm probably a little more responsible than $2 trillion. So this president comes along and infrastructure is a very popular thing. So the first thing the Democrats want to do is make sure that infrastructure, which was very popular, was coupled with the $3.5 trillion or $4.2 trillion stuff that is socialistic endeavors to bring that along to get it passed with one piece of legislation. There were two Democrats that objected to doing that, and several Republicans said, the only way we're going to stop this from happening is get a bipartisan infrastructure bill. So over a period of about a month, what we passed on Tuesday was put together by this bipartisan group. But it broke the backbone of the effort of the Democrats to get all these socialistic schemes that are in this $4.2 trillion bill along with it. What the Democrats wanted to do with the effort of keeping the two together was they wanted to eliminate the 2017 tax bill. They wanted to repeal that. And you know what that would do with stepped up bases and the estate tax and all that. They're still after that anyway, but I think they have so many Democrats that know the importance of passing on the family farm and the small business that they are going to get away with that. But that's where they started out, was financing this all by repealing the 2017 tax bill. So we stopped that. We stopped the new Green Deal. We stopped the amnesty that they wanted as part of their immigration package. Things like that. So after 4 years of Trump trying to get infrastructure, and then after the county meetings I've been in so far this year, all of the efforts wanting it, whether it's from the Iowa Farm Bureau, the Iowa Business and Industry Council, the Small Business Associations for Iowa, and I don't know, there's a long list of organizations that wanted us to get this passed. Both a lot of organizations in Iowa,
thank you,
a myriad more groups around the country that thought it was time to get such a bill passed. So I voted because I've been hearing about this for 5 years. And representing your constituents led me to do that. But the good that it brings to Iowa, in addition to the money that we would normally spend on our highways over the next 8 years, we're going to get, drift by drift, $4.2 trillion more. We're going to get $431 billion to repair Iowa's bridges.
Yes, sir.
Remember, Iowa's bridges 23% of them structurally deficient. In other words, questioning the safety of them. And we're 50 about the 50 states on that. So that was another thing I'd heard over a long period of time. Uh-huh. The next figure is a national figure, $65 billion for rural broadband. I don't know how much of that will go to Iowa, but it will go to unserved areas first and underserved areas second before it helps other people. Then there's $227 million for clean water and improving drinking water facilities for Iowa communities. There's $77 billion, of which a lot of that will be spent on locks and dams because they're 80 years old. So I hope going through this, you will see that we're spending probably a bill for the next generation. Because when you build a highway for 40 years, you don't tear it up for 20 years and lay it down again.
No, just put a windmill
over. The same way we broadband, that investment will bring a lot of economic development to rural Iowa as another one. So I will answer any questions that you have on the infrastructure bill. But I think I want to emphasize the second time.
I'll have a regular but I'm going to
my wife is very smart. And I know that because she reminded me she was valedictorian of her class. Her class had three times as many people as my class. And anyway, I called her up Tuesday night to pass this bill at 11 in the morning. I called her up. She said, "Why did you vote for that bill that has a mileage tax in it?" I said, "It doesn't have a mileage tax in it." Well, they said on Fox News it had a mileage tax.
I think she laughed it off.
So you understand that there's a lot of misinformation, and I think most of it comes from the conflating of the infrastructure bill with the $4.2 trillion every other package. In fact, you know, this other package would be a repeat of what happened in March. $1.9 trillion bill. That was only 9% for the virus, 91% for everything that the Democrats could ever get through on its own merits. And it passed on 50 to 49 votes. We had one senator because you believe everything that's on television, don't you? Or you leave everything on the internet. So I think when we went to the budget after that, we went on the budget, finished the budget at 4:30 a.m. on a Wednesday morning. I'll just give you an example of how inconsistent Democrats are. I offered two amendments. They were both defeated on a 50-49 vote. The Democrats want to eliminate the state local tax deduction from your income tax. In the 2017 tax bill, we put a cap on. So how often do you find the Democrats talking about all the time they want to make sure that the 0.1% of the wealthiest people in this country pay more taxes? If you eliminate the SALT deduction, you would be helping the top 10% with 70% of the benefits that you live in. So they talk out of both sides of their mouth. One time they want to tax the wealthy, but the next time they want to help their governors get more free money from the federal government through the deduction of your struggling local income tax. Another one, just to show you how extreme they are, I offered an amendment that again was defeated, 50-49. So it was pretty simple. Any immigrant that has, and I suppose this would be illegal immigrants, but any person in that category that had a criminal record could never get permanent residence in the United States. And that was 50-49. just to give you an example of what we Republicans tried to do on the budget resolution when it was before the United States Senate, I would imagine that there were about 45 Republican amendments, and a few of them got adopted, but most of them did not. I'm going to give you my view of Afghanistan, and then give you my view on immigration generally, and then you can get ready for questions. It's sad what's happening in Afghanistan because the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Secretary of Defense, the intelligence community advised the President that the takeover of the Taliban after we decided to pull our troops out could be faster than what a lot of people expected, and obviously what the President expected. Because the President overruled his intelligence people and general, and you see what's happening. The sad commentary is that it didn't have to happen this way, and it's a failure of leadership, but it may be reminiscent of what a former Secretary of Defense in the Democrat administration said about Biden. He'd been on the Foreign Relations Committee for about 30-some years, and every idea he had on defense or foreign affairs was a disaster.
We all know that.
And that's a Secretary of Defense saying that. That's not Chuck Grassley saying that. And so I think Congress is going to be as supportive as we can. We've increased the number of people that get the visa for the Afghans that are helping Americans because their life will be in danger now. We increased that by 8,000. So I think there's sufficient room for, if we get all those people out, to come to the United States. And that's something that we have a moral responsibility to do. But don't forget, for 20 years, under two Republican presidents and two Democrat presidents, we were doing everything we could for human rights of women in Muslim countries and children in Muslim countries. And it looks like that could all be for naught after 20 years of hard work for women to be able to work, women to be able to go to school, girls to go to school, doing away with childhood marriages, things of that nature that evidently they have a strong religious belief about. The last thing would be my visit to the border now 3 months ago. And things have gotten worse when I was down there. I get a lot of calls about what Congress can do. Congress, the law is not being enforced. It's the executive branch of government. We can give speeches, we can have hearings. But I can't even get Durbin, chairman of the Judiciary Committee, on two or three attempts to even have a hearing on the crisis at the border. And I've got letters to prove that I sent those requesting that because it would be too embarrassing for them to have a hearing on the disaster at the border. Anyway, what I first learned down there, among other things, was that our Border Patrol had a chance to brief the transition team of the incoming president way before he was sworn in. Said, what about the border? Our Border Patrol advised them to leave things the way they are, and if you want to process people, process them orderly. The president obviously didn't take that advice, and on the very first day in office, quit building the fence and inviting people into the country. And the only conclusion you can come to is that they actually believe in having an open border. And a country with an open border is not a sovereign nation. So, besides that fact of what they advised the new president to do and he didn't do, We found out that at that point it was only 841, now it could be 2,000 people, having criminal records coming into the country. One guy arrested had been convicted of second-degree murder in North Carolina, presumably deported, coming back into the country. We've had people on our terrorist list from the country of Yemen arrested. We've had more than 10% of the people testing for COVID. And so obviously as they go around the country, spreading that. More drugs coming into the country. And obviously quite a problem for the states of Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, California. And I don't think California cares, but I think the other states care. Enforcement of the law is all that can be done. We've got a hammer on that. There has to be some non-controversial immigration legislation.
I don't know if I'm gonna bother asking.
Pass, like for unskilled workers, for professional people, and for agricultural workers. But nobody's going to vote for that legislation just the next day. You've got to have a problem with people coming across the border. You took care of the few things that should be taken care of in relatively a non-controversial way. So I don't know whether the president will do it. The only hope is that in three or four cases, the courts have said he doesn't have the authority to do what he did. And one Texas judge said that he has to maintain the Remain in Mexico program. That's a program where Trump worked out with the President of Mexico, that these people stay on the Mexican side of the border until they can be processed. And so that discouraged many people leaving Central America coming to get into the United States. So a judge said he did that in an unlawful way, and hopefully that is going to be appealed to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. They're a fairly conservative court. I hope they back the district judge. Well, three of the states of Texas and Missouri took the case to the courts. So now I'm ready for questions on any subject. Yes.
He's going to get blowback.
So my question is going to be that you're voting for this because you think it's going to have a positive impact with Rod and with Bridges. Yet there's some language in here that says it's going to be based on metering money for places that have more than 7,800 residents, per traffic flow off of Bridges, that states are
He didn't read it. He didn't expect anybody else to either.
Population centers more than 7,800. I keep seeing that around here in Austin.
pretty clearly discussed in our Republican caucuses that the broadband money would first do unserved areas and then underserved areas before it would go to areas where there's already some service. Next question.
Wait a minute. That didn't answer.
Well, first of all, thank you for being here today, Senator Grassley. My question is information for someone like me. I'm a regular Fox News watcher, but even you mentioned that maybe they don't give us that incredible information all the time.
They're done.
I'm curious what sources you go to for information and who you talk to.
That's still a good question. He goes to the caucus.
First of all, my first obligation is to the Iowa constituents. That's
oh,
why
really?
I go to every county every year and have a Q&A, and I let them all. I always tell the groups that I have at my county meetings, I said, out of 3 million constituents, you don't have eyeball contact with very high percentage of Iowans. So I advise people, it's no good to come to my meetings, you know, email me or postal me
well,
or call into the office afterwards.
That's
another
big
source. Information from the
I sent at least five myself.
By the way, I get a daily report, and I didn't get the report today, but yesterday we were 7,000 behind. But
probably all about the infrastructure.
In March, we were 25,000 behind. And we got down
at Easter
time to not being behind at all.
Numbers.
So if you email me on noon, don't expect an
we're
answer by
12 numbers,
Then,
what the hell?
Then I have.
So the best way to reach him is by email,
six,
but he's 7,000 behind.
Six very good people that do legislative research.
Oh, really?
And they divide up all the business that I'm involved in, which would be all the bills of Congress, among themselves.
This is not good.
And they're a good source of information. And I get briefing papers from them on a regular basis, I have meetings face to face with them. On a regular basis, or they can talk to me anytime they want to talk to me. So that's another source of information.
Oh my gosh.
And then I try to keep up on two newspapers a day. One I call conservative, like the Wall Street Journal.
They're not conservative.
Except for the lifestyle section.
They're not conservative. They're not conservative.
And I particularly pay attention to their op-eds and their things. And then the other one is the Washington Post. But I also get 80 clippings from, like, the Davenport paper,
garbage.
The Des Moines Register.
Dear.
You want to know?
This is unbelievable.
One thing that makes me think, well, there's so much
he is, he should.
That how we keep up with it.
You're a
but
senator.
I think you've got to remember that once in a while there's something new in the Congress of the United States, but most of it is incremental. In other words, you know what you've done for the last 10 years on a certain subject.
So you just keep doing
about it. As a reauthorization bill comes. Or like this big bill we had for the infrastructure. Half of it had already been out of committees, and would have had, three or four of them would have passed as separate bills. In fact, two of the bills did pass. One of them, on the drinking water part, passed 89-2. Well, that hadn't gone through the House yet, so we put in this infrastructure bill with the chance that that's a better way of moving a lot of things along. So everything you do is not new. You've got some fine-tuning that you got to be on top of. Okay, next question. Yes.
Yeah, I have a question. I was looking at Stan and your crew about this infrastructure.
Go to the microphone. It's really hard to hear.
This is the last question.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes, I was listening to Senator Cruz at extensive time, amount of time. Why was he so
against this infrastructure bill. I know, because I listened to him. And also, I have a question. Where was the Republicans
last question,
on January 6th?
Unbelievable.
And also, whenever I tried to call your office in Washington, D.C., I never
said
your party at all. And Gavin will forget it. I never did it. I wonder if you're even there. I'm not a rebellious person, but I am a person for we the people. And I'm for God. I'm tired of... I want politicians who are born-again Christians who honor God in this country first. Then they let that. And if I appear angry, because I am, I've lived through this long.
Well, no. Don't be angry.
I would only say this because of what she said about her religion. I might offend some of you when I say that.
There can't be a litmus test on religion. That's crazy.
I didn't tell you what I believe. I accepted Jesus Christ as my personal Savior January 25th, 1945. And I'm a follower of Jesus Christ. You didn't know that, did you?
I don't even care about that. It's none of my business.
Why was Senator Cruz so vehemently against this bill?
The second thing she asked, I want to inform all of you that, for instance, she couldn't get through. But we can, before this bill came up, we had 800 phone calls on voicemail. So all those voicemails went through. If you're from Iowa, you'll get a written response if you left your address. We don't answer letters outside of one of those. Voicemails were outside of it.
Yeah.
We don't answer them. But you can imagine that when you get those kind of calls, it's possible that she didn't get through. But if you can get through, then you call Penny in the Davenport office and have her get your message to me.
Poor. Don't worry, David.
Penny or John will answer the phone.
And she said, call the office. Well, everybody in that room, that was before the bill, everybody in that room agreed to call you and urge you not to vote for this bill.
Did you get a bunch of phone calls?
Well, maybe.
Here we go. She's entitled to have you answer her first question. I can only suppose what Cruz said, because I didn't hear what you said. But I think he's very sincere about what he said, and I would only disagree with his judgment. I'm not going to disagree with what he said, because I'd probably agree with what he said. But this is kind of getting back to this first thing I told you about, getting to the infrastructure. This business of whether or not it was wise to separate the infrastructure bill from the $4.2 trillion big bill. Senator Cruz, and probably a good part of our strategy, thought that wasn't a good thing to do. The reason I thought it was a bad thing to do is because suppose all $6 trillion of that got passed. I think with Secretary of Treasury Larry Summers in the Clinton administration, Harvard economist, well-respected, has been telling us since January and then again in April, by spending all that money, you're feeding the fires of inflation.
I don't know.
And we felt that if we just left it to the Democrats and Sinema and Manchin were getting so much pressure that they'd get their 50 votes to get all $6 trillion passed. That's why I applauded our bipartisan group for separating them, because you got to understand, President Trump didn't want them separated, but nothing was going to move until he'd get it separated, and he didn't know whether he could can get Manchin and Sinema on board or not. And I think that's the reason why Senator Cruz said what he said, and that's why I did what I did. Okay. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for coming. I'm blown away.
That concludes our one.